Namaste. Good morning, everyone. Today, I would like to touch upon something slightly different. It is about the company we keep. And I will read out one short passage from Joel Goldsmith. As you might be aware, I have been referencing Joel Goldsmith in the recent talks. And thereafter, a longer passage to share this with you. The nature of what goes on in a person's mind permeates the atmosphere. The next few words might sound a bit strong, but there's a truth in them. It is hardly possible to be in the presence of a mystic or of a spiritually endowed person and not feel a sense of lightness, a spiritual uplift. On the other hand, it is also hardly possible to be in the presence of a gross individual and not feel the heaviness, animality, or greed that is emanating from them. This is a very important pointer, not only for ourselves, but those who are around us as far as we are concerned. Who are the people around us? How are they? How are we? When one becomes more and more sensitive, so to speak, one picks up upon these subtle vibrations and they impact us tremendously. We may not realize it. For example, let's say there's someone in our environment who is by and large life negative, always complaining, and so on. Without a degree of awareness, it is quite possible that we absorb those vibrations ourselves unconsciously. It is a spiritual grounding that does not allow this to happen. Let's take an example. You are with a friend at a restaurant and something goes wrong with the order of your friends. And perhaps he gets agitated, speaks rudely to the waiter. One can find that agitation arises within oneself and one then becomes an ally to the friend and gets involved in the drama. That is why the saying, you are the company you keep, has a lot of depth in it. Company is not just people, it is even thought processes, the neighbors, thoughts, objects. You are the company you keep. That is why the Tibetans were very good face readers, because they would say, The face expresses a man's thoughts right from the moment he or she was born. Whereas speech depends a lot on the conditioning as well. So to the Tibetan masters, the face revealed everything. No words needed to be spoken. Then we find when we are drawn to spiritual matters, satsang, physical satsang is when you are in a group. Long distance satsang, when you are in a like-minded group with a similar interest, a spiritual interest. And this group is different from your social group, socially conditioned friends from childhood, maybe from society. And the exposure takes place to the spiritual group. And it may not be people from the same teaching. It could be across different teachers' teachings, but with the same interest. So what Joel Goldsmith says, I am quite sure many of you all have experienced what I'm going to read out. And it gives a lot of comfort, his words. Bear with me as it's a couple of paragraphs. When this spiritual way of life begins to change our nature and we find ourselves being cut off from society, we do not always realize that we are going through a transitional period and that once this transition has been made and we are completely isolated from our former associates, we will be led into the companionship of those of our own spiritual household. But as long as we are still tabernacling with the world, we are not going to meet those of our own household. It is only when we have died to the world that suddenly out of this whole universe, one person crosses our path whom we recognize as a kindred soul, and then another, and then another. If our lives are cluttered up with the social activities in which our friends and relatives have involved us, however, we are not free to enjoy the companionship of that one, two or more who eventually cross our path. Nor are we free to make the journeys that are sometimes necessary to be in their company, because we may not always find that one, two or three in our own community. It is true that we may see these companions only once in a year or once in 3 years, but that will not make any difference, because this is a spiritual companionship that takes no thought of time and place or space. And even if there were years in which we were physically apart from those of our spiritual household, upon the next meeting, we would be wholly atone. The student who is at the stage of witnessing his friends and relatives drop away, and for that matter, the whole world, sometimes becomes fearful and lonesome and begins clutching at something or someone, and very often he is clutching at the wrong thing or the wrong person.
And why? Because he cannot take aloneness. And if he cannot endure aloneness, he cannot enter into this life. As spiritual truth begins to reveal itself in a person, a silence descends upon him. An inability to speak and to be a part of the world's gabble, gabble, gabble. And this, of course, makes everyone feel that he is odd. Even those who are starting on the path cannot quite understand that desire to be still, that total inability to say anything and yet to impart and even to receive. And so this too, which is another form of that inability to endure aloneness and quietness, breaks up many a student's progress on the way. You see, sometimes this is accompanied by fear. Fear of letting go of past associations, where we derived our sense of self from them, our identity from them. Many, many times I have come across this, where people are going through a transition, a change, and they cannot bear it anymore to be in social environments, parties, where what is the topic of discussion is the weather, the happening movies in town, restaurants, bars, and so on and so forth. They end up keeping quiet, and then they are considered oddballs. That is because one is now turning within. One is no longer enamored by what is outside. So it is very natural to feel isolated and alone. It is a part of the process of spiritual unfoldment. And as he so rightly points out, one will find that on life's journey, one starts coming across people of this newer vibration that has been introduced to us, in a sense. People with interests in similar subjects. That is what starts happening. So it's nothing to be afraid of. Even when fear arises, that fear needs to be witnessed. It is the ego's last battle. This is me. This is me and my story. Now, on this subject of fear, there is one question I received on the email, which I would like to share with you and discuss it. From the last 2-3 days, one message is reflecting, which is to follow only one teaching, as I am following so many. I did so many courses from the last 8 years, but never felt dropping any of them till now. I was fine with all of this, but got peace of mind what my soul was craving, got it through the teachings of Rameshji and your satsangs, but never felt like dropping any of all that I did over the last 8 years due to fear. I can also see lots of changes within myself, in my body, as body is the best guru to guide us.
I was pushing myself so hard, I was losing interest in pranayam, then japa, then yoga. I want to stay with only one now. My question is, I have participated in so many satsangs, got the essence of Rameshji's teaching. But can you please tell me in simple words, what are some pointers which I can see or perform every day in place of aarti, chanting, shlokas, recitations, etc.? My heart now says to stop everything and just witness every day. But somewhere, my mind is scared of dropping everything. Please throw some light on this. And the last line is so beautifully said. This is also a divine will. You see, someone had asked Ramana Maharshi, one of his devotees, that they do japa, they do pranayam, and are also following Bhagwan's method of self-inquiry. So is that okay? And Bhagwan replied, it is. If you feel that the mind is getting tired with one practice, switch to the other. I have read this in a book which Ganesan has written, Ramana Periya Perunam, in case anyone asks for the reference. He said, it is all right because that is the nature of the mind. So if you get tired of one, switch to the other. You see, because they are all leading to the same space. Now, some people needn't go through this process of different practices. They settle into one. Other people may want a practice like yoga, which is to do with asanas, etc., and also stills the mind, but they need a physical practice and they follow a particular teaching of jnana yoga, advaita, whatever, which is also fine. The point is, as it is so rightly said in this question, out of fear, we perform many practices. We don't want to let go because we feel we might miss out on something. And in the context of Indian conditioning, it is quite strong because we have been born and brought up with the belief to do japa, to chant mantras and shlokas. So it is more understandable in the Indian context, this fear. Now, for example, these are all methods to bring the rampant thinking mind to a point of stillness. If one asks oneself, which is that practice, that teaching, or whatever it may be, which brings me to the point of peace, if one just keeps the fear quotient aside and reflects on all that I am doing, what makes me feel peaceful, equanimous, shanti, by all means, one can go on with some practices. But when one reflects that, what all am I doing out of fear? Is that practice actually giving me peace, or it is taking me away from peace? That is the question to be asked. Now, someone asked me again something similar, that there is no practice in this teaching, but I love something to do. I want something to do. But this teaching has no practice. Now, that is not really true. It may appear like that. You see, there are different levels of acceptance also. Now, for example, when I went to my spiritual teacher and he said, everything is God's will, I accepted it totally because it was my life's experience. When he said, nobody truly does anything, I accepted it totally because it was so obvious to me. But I saw my fellow satsangis, people who had come from all over the world, sometimes the next day, they would tell Rameshji that, you know, you said this, and then I observed the events in the day. I went to this restaurant, this person I saw, I spoke to this person on the road, and then I realized that, as you say, that, you know, they are acting on their genetics and programming. And so I can see now slowly, slowly that nobody is truly the doer of their actions. You see, sometimes the teaching must go through the intellect and then permeate into the heart. And as Rameshji would say, at the end of the day, take your beer or cup of coffee, look back on the events of the day and find one action which you truly feel is your action. And then ask yourself, my action depended on something I saw, tasted, smelled, touched, or heard. If I didn't see something, my action would not have happened. Then is it truly my action? So this too became a practice for some people till they realized that, my God, this is so true. Everything is simply a happening. So it is the fear that I will not reach my goal, in this case, a spiritual goal. It is the fear that something will happen to me if I stop doing this practice. That is the foundation of the ego, to protect itself. And so this needs to be looked at by all of us objectively. And the answer which I always come to at the end, because it was for me, is where is peace to be found? And then look at your practices in that light. All right. If anyone would like to share anything, they may ask now. In the beginning of May, there will be a joint talk with my mother, since quite a few of you enjoyed the first one. So I requested her to go a bit deeper into her experience and the sharing of it with all of us. That will happen. The newsletter will carry the date. And another thing to add here is, as many of us in India are seeing the beginning of the second wave of COVID, it's almost like an action replay, a deja vu. Once again, the enormity of the scale is staggering. And it is in times like these when truly it is one's inner core, one's spiritual strength that can see one through such times.
God's grace.
Don't know how the mic fell off. I hope my team of volunteers is not too upset with that. All right. I hope something hasn't gone wrong. Just give me a second as I can't see anything on the screen. Yes, Sutara.
Namaste, Gautam ji. How are you?
I am good. How are you doing? Are you able to see me?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Hope you can see me too.
Yes.
Gautam ji, I have two questions, so I'll just outline both of them. The first question is with regards to your earlier session today about the satsang, the company that we keep. So I have few people that I speak spiritually about. So I have few satsangs or spiritual companionship. Amongst them, one I actually don't connect in any level. Like she is probably in north, I'm probably in south. We have no connection whatsoever. And we have a lot of friction whenever we talk and when we speak. I don't know if it's my part or her part, or it's just the energy that we both bring to the table that we have that friction all the time. Yesterday I went to meet with another mutual friend of ours, and we were talking about how we could have a spiritual journey somewhere to go to a specific temple and stuff. And they were saying that we would all go together. And I immediately in my head, and I don't have a space between what goes on in my head and what comes out of my mouth. So I don't have that gap. And so I said to her, I'd rather not have her in that journey, because if we are going on a spiritual journey, I'd rather be calm and collected and be in that moment, in that spiritual space. With her there, that energy friction would be there. So I'd rather not have her. And then I had a foot in the mouth syndrome, and I thought, oops, that's not what I was supposed to say. That's not part of the teaching. So I'm not supposed to feel that way about her. And because she's also part of that consciousness, and she's also part of that, whatever she invokes in me. So I'm like, but I can't help but feel that friction, and I can't ignore that. So that's number one. I don't know how to acknowledge it or to work on it. That's number one question. Number two is, as you know, that I'm in a banking profession, and I come across people of different walks in life, and they all challenge me in different ways. And one of the people that I met during this professional life, one of the people I asked, he's also into spirituality. And then I asked this person that, how do you meet so many people with different intentions, yet keep grounded in what your faith and belief system is? And he said, this is Kurukshetra, i.e. a battlefield. So everything is jayas, everything is acceptable. And for me, that didn't resonate with me, because I believe in certain morality. But then came the question, morality according to who? For example, in America, you drive a car in a certain side of the road, but in India, you drive it on the other side. So I'm like, morality according to who? The rules change according to the country, the people, and everything. So I am a bit confused. Even my morality is according to my conditioning. So I'm like, morality according to who? Do we have morality in Advaita? Do we have a certain code of conduct in Advaita? I don't know. And that kind of brought another question.
Well, thank you for being so articulate, because I think you have spoken on many people's behalf, and you've answered most of your questions in the question itself. You see, the first point is that it's actually, as you so rightly said, you can't help feeling a certain way towards a certain person. In spite of knowing the teaching that all there is consciousness. We are all instruments of the same force, so to speak. You can't help it. That is the point. Now the point is, does Uttara want to not have the pleasure of going on that trip because that person is going to be there? Or is it worth going on that trip despite that person being there? This is a decision she has to take. It is as simple as that. This is not about forcing ourselves to get along with everyone and be in certain situations because, after all, we've accepted this teaching so beautifully. No, we are still normal human beings. The difference is that we don't hold this person accountable for their actions. We do not judge them for being the way they are, because they may be that way with you and not with someone else. So that drops away. And therefore, if one finds one is in a disagreement with such a person, one agrees to disagree without being disagreeable. You see, that is what happens. So you might find that with the understanding, knowing that this person is on the trip, I may still want to go. Or you might find, no, I'm quite sure this takes away my peace of mind, and therefore I would rather forgo the trip. Either way, none is right or wrong. We have to do precisely that which we think and feel we should do. And by all means, if our peace of mind is to be held at the highest, and the decision means not going on the trip, there is nothing wrong with that. The main point is, are we blaming and condemning someone else for being the way they are? Our peace is to be found there, you see. If we are not doing that, we know that the teaching has permeated into the heart. That is the answer to your first point. Regarding the second point, the world is a battlefield provided you see everyone as individuals with a sense of doership. If you start seeing with an even vision that it is the same consciousness that animates everyone, everyone is an instrument of God equally. Their genetics, their conditioning, their nature has been decided by a higher power. The world is no longer a battlefield full of individuals with a sense of doership. Yes, we may have to take on some people. We may get along with others. That is the quality and nature of life. We do not have to love everyone, but we have to accept everyone as being the way they have been made by a higher force. That is what happens, you see. And so life truly becomes harmonious, because even the people one doesn't get along with, one approaches them with a different quality. One no longer has the sting of doership associated with our equation with them. And that actually transforms relationships. It truly transforms our worldview. We no longer view the world as a battlefield, truly. It just changes the entire complexion of the game. And so this question of morality, you see, it is one fundamental aspect that if I truly understand that all there is consciousness, can consciousness harm itself? If I truly live this understanding that all there is consciousness, the thought of harming someone else cannot arise. Consciousness cannot harm itself. Yes, an act may happen based on one's genetics and programming, and it offends someone else, or something happens which is not nice. Regret may arise that, my God, I didn't intend this to happen and it happened. And it may make one apologize. But one knows that it was a happening. So I'm not blaming someone else and I'm not blaming myself. So when this understanding is lived, that consciousness is all there is, one finds that we stop judging, condemning, blaming, accusing others as well as ourselves. That is what happens. We don't want people to meet our standards of morality, as you so rightly said, it's based on our conditioning. Yeah. All these kind of concepts start dropping away, and we are left with a mind which is free of all this. It's a vacant mind, not an idiot mind, a vacant mind, open, wide open, to receive, to accept, to embrace. That is what happens.
Okay? Thank you. Thank okay. you.
Yes, Hem.
Pranam, Gautam.
Pranam. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I had two comments. The first was actually related to what Uttara shared about being in a very difficult workspace. And often seeing that a lot of judgment comes up, but then after some time, the understanding also comes up that this is happening through another individual. So there is always this flip-flop that is happening. The second comment was in response to something that you shared. You mentioned the ego's last battle, and a thought arose saying, you know, wouldn't this be such a lovely title for a book that maybe captured, you know, questions and answers of different seekers? So I just wanted to, you know, submit those two thoughts at your own speed.
Hem, you know, I had written an essay called Journeys at the Office Desk. Now I've forgotten which book it was, and I don't know if it was in The End of Separation, but it was about my experience at work and all that work taught me, you know. And it was almost like a kind of adventure, because I had so many aspects to deal with, starting with the fact that when I took over, I was the youngest and the entire staff was older to me. So you can imagine the judgment that came my way. This guy doesn't know anything. What's he going to tell us, you know? It started like that. I had clients who didn't pay our bills. I had staff members who used to fight with each other. So, and every time, every Sunday, when I would go and meet Ramesh ji, I would go a little bit before the satsangs. And he would say, what happened at work? Because you see, it was a ground to practice the teaching. Because work is relationships. It is the real world in that sense. Whether it is your co-workers, whether it is your seniors, suppliers, clients, it is actually really a training ground for life. And it's very hard on some people. I know that. It was hard on me when I was young. But it really gives you a dimension which you would not get if you didn't have that exposure. So I would recommend that article, because it's from someone who has walked the talk, been through the fire, and maybe it will help you in a certain way. And the other thing is that the title of the book is really beautiful, but unfortunately, these kind of books don't sell. You know, that's the whole thing. And I used to tell Ramesh ji that, you know, these are never going to be bestsellers, your books, because nobody wants to be told that everything is God's will. Nobody wants to be told nobody does anything, you see. And that is why I think, although now, Hem, I must say that the world is more and more coming to an understanding of non-duality, as they call it in the West, Advaita here. I do feel it is spreading more and more. And ultimately, all teachings are that. But I don't know if an ego would want to buy a book called The Ego's Last Battle. Okay. You're in Delhi, right?
Yes.
All okay there?
All okay.
You are on work from home mode?
I am on work from home mode since this Friday.
Okay, okay. Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Yes, Holger.
Yes, hello. Hello, Gautam.
Yes. Just, is it cold where you are, Holger?
No, I'm not aware of. No, not cold.
Not cold, okay.
Maybe 60 degrees. I'm not up to date. I haven't checked the temperature for a while, but it's comfortable.
Oh, nice.
Good, good. Yeah, just gratitude. Nothing specific on my mind. I'm just... One interesting thing I just remember, some days ago, I felt very heavy inside. And... like sadness, or I called it depression, but I think that's an overkill. It's maybe too much of a term. And then at one point it felt like acidity, like acid inside of me. I never had this before. It was very interesting. Mm. And I don't know why I share this, because it's just interesting, and it felt very freeing. Yeah,
what
that's
part?
It.
What part of it felt freeing?
The feeling that it wasn't connected with me, the heaviness, the sadness. It felt like, but I'm very familiar. I mean, I had this for decades. This just being pulled inside and being busy just with feelings that didn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm. You see, Holger, there are a couple of aspects here. Once again, it's very beautiful that you all share such things, because everyone experiences these to some degree or the other. One is, which I truly believe, is the inherent sadness of separation that we come with into this world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes when someone is down and one cannot put a reason to it, nothing makes sense. Why is this feeling there? That separation from the source, which one is carrying as a latent seed, that is there in a large number of people. What I refer to as the inherent sadness of separation. The other, of course, is that there might be some pain which is unconscious or subconscious. But as you so rightly said, the beauty is the witnessing of it. Many people, when the gift of witnessing is not there, are unaware. And then the acidity builds up in the body and then takes over, you see. It literally takes over the body, stress, anxiety, etc. The beauty of witnessing is there is a gap created. It does not mean witnessing will end this process. It does not mean if I'm in witnessing state, all this will not happen. But because I am not so identified with all these emotions, the witnessing of them releases them. They are not held on to, clutched on to, and then this entire story made out of it. That is the gift of witnessing. And this is the human conditioning. Sometimes happy, sometimes sad. Sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain. This is the duality of life. And so it is really, it can be seen that when one is not invested in sadness, in this is me, this is my story, it's just witnessed as a movement, it brings a sense of release. And even that is allowed to be the way it is. That is the beauty of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Another thing is just, I just want to share this joy, really. I found some friends on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so wonderful. We once in a while meet, like four people together, for example, or one-on-one, and just talk about different teachings or about whatever. And it's just so beautiful. It's such a gift.
Mm. Yes.
To have this human connection. And it's, beyond words. It's like being in love without being in love, without any entanglement or something. It's just...
I used to, in the early years of my journey, I went to retreats of Eckhart Tolle, a couple of them, three, four of them. And till that age, which was maybe till I was 30, life was all about socializing and, having a good time with friends, especially school friends, college friends, etc. But at these retreats, it was my first exposure to people who were coming together, people I didn't know, but came for the same thing. And I must say that even though the retreats were 3 days or 4 days, certain relationships developed which were truly heart-based. You feel like you've known these people for so long, although you've just met them. That is what, for me, and then, of course, at Rameshji's satsangs, where I went every Sunday, one bonded with people from across the world, across India, because there was this whole, the teaching was like glue, It was bringing like-minded people together. Today, we have technology like the internet, social media, Zoom, and it's a beautiful gift if this thing can be shared and we find associations of like-minded people through this medium. I think it's fantastic.
Thank you, Bhattan.
Okay. Yes, Vandana.
Hello, Gautam. I've seen you after a long time.
Yes, yes.
So you know the situation is grim all over India regarding COVID.
Yeah.
And as doctors, we see in a lot of patients. But it leaves you with a sense of guilt because there are so many patients we have to refuse every day. We cannot see them. We cannot test them because we are also reaching those levels of, explosive levels.
I know.
How does one handle this refusal? Because everybody needs help right now. It is a desperate situation in India.
Yes. Yes, Vandana. And, this is when the teaching comes to the foreground. Because now you know that what you can do is your best. You can do all that you think and feel you should do. Whatever you have been given, whatever capacities God has given you, to that extent, you offer yourself. Beyond that, you cannot go. You see, so this is where it ends, with the understanding. Of course, sadness will arise. Of course, one will feel bad because the system is not geared for this volume of the problems which have come our way.
Yeah.
Regrets will arise, but the guilt will not be there. The guilt will not be there because you know that there's a higher force, a higher power at play here. The rest is the mechanics. It is like something slightly unrelated, but when Jesus met Pilate and told Pilate, "You have no power over me except that which is given to you from above." And so it is in a time like this. I know it sounds harsh, but as Joel Goldsmith said, give up this belief in two powers, good and evil. Whatever is happening right now is the will of God. We may not like it. Many things have happened in the past that we didn't like, which we found atrocious. But there is only one source. And therefore, here and now, in this moment, I do all that I think and feel I should do, which is within my capacity. And thereafter, I leave it to God's will. There's nothing really beyond that.
We are facing that. It's impossible situation. It is, so difficult to manage.
No, and Vandana, I know someone whose parents are both doctors. in a smaller town, both got vaccinated, both got COVID. And despite that, they are going back into their practice to help others, you see. That is it. We do what we can. It's quite unprecedented. I mean, you know what happened was when the UK and the US went into their second wave and the UK has just come out of it. Everyone in India thought that India has escaped the second wave.
Absolutely.
And now, and there were so many theories, Vandana. I'm not saying that they were right or wrong, but I myself saw so many doctors coming onto television and giving their theories of how the Indian immunity is a certain way, the second wave won't happen, this, that. You see, everyone gives their point of view, but we never know what happens the next moment.
No, the virus is smarter than the human mind.
You see, that's the whole thing. We do not know. And when we give up this arrogance that we know things, when we accept there's so much we don't know, then the opening happens. And you see, this leads to a lot of questions, Vandana, as doctors also would be wondering, and even lay people, that there's such a gray area, you see. After vaccination, COVID, before vaccination, COVID, what is the efficacy? If there's a second wave, will there be a third wave? You see, we are caught in the middle of it. Who has all these answers?
It's an unpredictable situation.
Which it always was.
Yeah. Life is unpredictable. So.
And you said the virus is smarter than us. It reminds me what Rameshji would say. I think he must have seen because he lived to the age of 92. Smallpox was a very big thing in perhaps when he was younger, I don't know. And he would say in satsang that, you know, we claimed victory over the smallpox, but nobody asked the smallpox what it felt. You see, because we are seeing things from our view. Yeah. Whereas the variety and magnificence of God's creation, the species is so vast, so fantastical. Our vision is only the protection and preservation of the human species. And the amount of aggression and violence we have inflicted on the animal kingdom because of this is, I mean, atrocious.
Absolutely.
So it's amazing.
In life, you cannot help everyone. Maybe that's the lesson.
You cannot. In life, you can help those who come to you for help. You can help those you can reach out to for help. But beyond that, God is the only helper. Even your help is God's help through you.
Absolutely.
So it's no longer my help. It is no longer I am helping someone. Even that ownership drops away.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I think we can now sit in silence for perhaps 3 minutes or so. I will just change the view so I can see all of you.